time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Man, for a long time, Ohio State drove about 80. So I don't I appreciate Ryan Day even pretending there was a speed limit out there.
Yeah. With SI's Pat Forty.
Uh-huh. And Ohio State's never really had anything to do with unscrupulous sports.
No.
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, Pat. Put a bow on the non-dust-ups in Destin. Jimbo Fisher has spoken since our last podcast, and he has nothing to say. Easy to get Jimbo to say nothing.
No, he still said a lot of words and said them very quickly, but they amounted to nothing. Said, we're moving on, about 26 times in response to about everything that came up. But, yeah, the non-dust-ups in Destin left me a little bit disheartened, but there's always hope that on October 8th, somebody will show their true feelings.
At least you look more tan. You got a nice shine to you.
I've not spent much time outside. Unfortunately, these things, you know, you send home one picture of the beach and everybody's like, oh, you spend all your time on the beach. Actually, you spend most of your time sitting around a lobby of a hotel waiting for people to come out of a boardroom.
Toes in the water, ass in the sand is what I think.
Nope. No, I went to the beach yesterday morning briefly. That was
it. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure you're actually, just to cover fights in Vegas. Sometimes I'd go in and out and never step foot in a casino. People would always, oh my God, Vegas. It's like, yeah, that was good. But no one wants to believe that. So you can't even, you just got to go with it. Just go with it. Just say, hell yeah.
Okay.
Filed from the beach. Jealous?
I planted a listening device in their boardrooms and just went and sat on the beach.
See what everyone else puts out there. Yeah, so Jimbo Fisher has got nothing additional to say about Nick Saban. Nick Saban obviously dialed it back immediately, let Jimbo get away with just calling him out. And so Jimbo is now saying we're moving on to the future of what goes on and trying to fix the problems we have in college football. Sign the number one class, Jimbo. I don't know if you got a problem. That's a pretty good problem to have.
Yep.
There are more pressing needs than our arguments. We're moving on. I have no problem. Seemed like you had a problem a couple weeks ago, but that's all right. All right, so let's get down to it. You know, we're going to go to like the scorecards, the Bernie Pacheco or whatever was the guy, the boxing guy. Let's check this isn't fight over, doctor. The fight doctor. This isn't over because we can get a late knockout on the 8th that's of right. October. But at this point, who's leading on the scorecards of this fight? Is it Saban, who clearly, you know, accused Jimbo of buying all his recruiting class and angering Jimbo quite a bit? Or is it Jimbo who just scorched earth Saban and called into question his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, it was a disappointing performance by both guys here. But Jimbo, I thought especially, he was backpedaling like a five-star DB away from his incredibly explosive words on May 19th.
But if he's leading on the scorecards, you get on your bike and you don't get knocked out. That's what you do.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, as I wrote in the column, much like Texas A&M football, he overpromised and underdelivered. Got asked about, you specifically said this about Nick Saban. What are you talking about? We're moving on. I asked him if he's been contacted by the NCAA. We're moving on. Somebody else asked if he had regrets about even opening up this can of worms and attacking Saban. We're moving on. So that's what we got from him. But yes, I would say on the scorecard right now, after two rounds, Jimbo's ahead. Certainly in the eyes of his fan base, he's ahead because they're tickled that he went after King Saban. And I think other people around the SEC kind of like that as well. So if you want to get at least win the offseason and get your fans even more excited or thinking that you're a good guy or their guy, that's a good thing to do, is to dust it up with Nick. In reality, I guess I'd still say Jimbo's ahead. Just Saban was remarkably subdued and almost, I don't know, kind of like chastened even when he went in there. Jimbo was just kind of like smiling through his moving on business. So I feel like Jimbo came out of this feeling like he's on the balls of his feet and ready for round three.
It's good. I got to take Jimbo in the lead at this point. I mean, what Saban called out probably isn't even cheating. It continues to perk up the ears of every recruit in the country that A&M is paying big.
Yep.
Now, they may learn that that's not true, and you will be disappointed if the offer doesn't come in that you want. But at least, you know, the one of the advantages Nick Saban has is when Nick Saban calls a recruit or his family or his high school, like, that call is getting taken immediately.
Yes.
Okay, I don't care who you are, pretty much. It's Nick Saban's on the phone. Like, what? That wasn't the case for Jimbo Fisher across the country. It might be now. So I think he gets a bump out of that. Again, whether it's you believe it or not, I tend to believe Coach Saban on that. There are some collectives helping, but that's the thing. So he gets that advantage. So really what he's called out on, he could pout and protest, but it's actually a good thing in terms of recruiting, and everything goes back to recruiting. And then he just undressed Saban, called him out. So he gets all those shots in, and there was definitely some pent up venom on that. Yep. And he is red meat for his fan base that, 4 years in is, he hasn't won the division yet. He's got a second contract that's, nearly groundbreaking or groundbreaking in size. And his fan base loves him to death coming off an 8-4, 4-4 season.
Yeah. He changed the subject from that disappointing 8-4 in a rather effective way.
Pretty, right. Pretty brilliant, honestly.
Brilliant. Yeah. 4-4 in the SEC, and his fan base is 100% behind him.
Yeah.
Going into year 5.
He would still trade R.C. Slocum's record right now, So,
yeah. This is just a tremendous. I think he's way up on the score table. Now, here's the problem. On October 8th in Tuscaloosa, Saban is saving up for the knockout shot. Jimbo may have punched his arms out with a lot of jabs. So, more importantly, Will Anderson is coming for the knockout
punch. And that, I will say this, that on paper, Alabama has the better team, and I would say the best team in the country going into this season. And if they are the better team on October 8th, I have to think Nick Saban ain't pulling back at all. That's when you're going to see whether who's really over this or not over it, and neither side's over it. And whoever's winning is going to try to win as big as possible.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's going to be Will Anderson still in there up 4 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, coming at whoever's the luckless quarterback for the Aggies, and they're chucking the ball. The starters are in. That's my anticipation if Alabama proves to be as good as we think they are.
This is big boy football. Let's go. Yeah, there's none of that. They actually end up agreeing that there needs to be the dreaded guardrails are up, looking for guardrails.
Yeah, Jimbo actually used some of the same wording as Saban about equity, equality, and a level playing field for everyone and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, the level playing field. Let me go back to this, okay? The level playing field in recruiting. Saban says, we got the same scholarship, same academic support, healthcare, whatever it is. What he fails to mention is that the recruiting department at Alabama, and I don't have the exact figure, but I'm going to guess there are 50 scouts and analysts and video guys and all of that who work solely on recruiting. And they do not have that at Georgia Tech, let alone Troy. And so when you are able to scout every high school player in the country over and over and over, and it's not, I hope our running backs coach, when he isn't coaching, has got a couple minutes to watch high school film.
Right.
That is a demonstrative advantage. When you have a graphics department that will fashion just the right graphics, so when you text a recruit, he gets something that is unique and talks and brands you, that's a lot better than hoping that the running back coach can be like, hey, what's up? It's Coach Jones over here. Right?
Yeah.
The support staffs on these things are not remotely close. When you have, as we've talked, 12,000 square foot recruiting lounge that will be used 7 days a year. That is a distinct advantage. So there's no parity in recruiting.
Right.
These are soft dollars, secondary dollars. Now you're saying, give me the direct money.
Yeah.
And that's what Saban doesn't want. And that's what even Jimbo probably doesn't want. Although I don't know what the hell Jimbo is talking about, really, because the old way wasn't really benefiting A&M. The new way is going pretty good. Enough with the parody and the guardrails. The guardrails for who?
Yeah.
Not the people getting the money now. It's guardrails for analysts and college town contractors.
Yeah, that I had a talk with one administrator here who said that, the real fat right now or excess in an athletic department is in the recruiting department. And that's where you've got just scads of people there doing all of the, as you said, the you know, the social media stuff, the mailings, the whatever you're doing to initially woo recruits. And then, of course, yes, you've got the people, you know, breaking down who we should recruit and every inch of film that's ever existed on them and all that. And yeah, that's where the big boys have pumped the most money into that. And so that's where the advantage comes from there. And it's one reason while, you know, I'm not saying college football coaching is easy by any stretch, but this idea that coaches are more burned out than ever because they've got to deal with this year-round calendar, but they're not doing as much recruiting. The guys that are the full-time assistants, because they've got 93 assistants doing all the grunt work for them.
They have two former head coaches out of the 12 football analysts, by my count, a boatload of recruiting people. So, yeah, you don't see that at Troy.
I don't even know if, like, that's interesting. They consider the recruiting department the excess. I actually think it might be the most important part.
Yeah, well, excess might have been more
real close. Right, yeah.
Excess might have been my interpretation, but that is where they've pumped a lot of resources in.
Alabama will still have that advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right, at least they have it right now, but maybe it doesn't if we have to spend the money. So again, it's the passive dollar with the active dollar. You think about how much work the NFL puts into deciding whether to take the eighth a player at 8 or 15, let alone 12 and 9 and 8, right?
Yeah.
And how important that is and how franchises swing on those things. How smart was Kansas City to identify Patrick Mahomes and not write him off as a system QB and say he's worth the 10th pick?
Yeah, and trade up and get him.
And trade up and get him. And change the entire dynamic of the Kansas City Chiefs, where the Chicago Bears misread Mitchell Trubisky and changes the dynamic of them. So scouting and all this, but it's an enormous advantage. So, you know, these guys, the old way was good for them. Now, there's some talk like, you know, I wonder how Saban doesn't want to lose recruits. But I will say this, like these classes he's signing now are probably his last classes that will play for him. He's going to be 70, right?
Yeah, he's
70, 75. I mean, you know,
I think maximum 5 years, I would say.
So these last few classes are important, but. And maybe that's why he's so outspoken on this, where the younger, like Lane Kiffin's like, this is what I got to deal with, right?
Yeah.
Saban's like, this sucks. I'm retiring in 3 years anyway, but I got my team.
Right.
I don't know. But because it certainly sees some of the younger coaches are not real. They're bracing it more. I don't know. It will be interesting, but there was no parity before. They did everything they could to not have parity.
It's absolutely not parity. I mean, again, Nick Saban likes, for the most part, likes rules that benefit him. And he'll adjust to the rules if he has to, but he likes the ones that benefit him the most.
Cleveland.com, interesting comments by Ohio State coach Ryan Day, coach third base.
Yes.
He's referred to in Ann Arbor. He put a name, image, and likeness price tag on what he believes it will take to keep the Ohio State roster together. Do you know this number, or can we play like Price is Right?
I saw the number, and okay. I was like, wow.
It's not $1. Don't bid $1. He's saying $13 million will do it.
A year.
A year.
In other words, almost as much as Pat Sajak makes on Wheel of Fortune.
Pat Sajak could have his own team. It could be like Pat Sajak University. And he just donates all the money. He says $13 million will do it. And it's basically let's see, what was his quote here? Now, that'd be about $150,000 a year per guy, but it's obviously the bigger players. If the speed limit's 45 miles per hour and you drive 45 miles per hour, a lot of people are going to pass you by. If you go too fast, you're going to get pulled over. Man, for a long time, Ohio State drove about 80. So I don't know. I appreciate Ryan Day even pretending there was a speed limit out there.
Yeah.
Some of us are old enough to remember. Basically saying that everyone's going to go in the portal. And all these great recruits they have, they've got to match dollars. And I agree, this is a problem. But one phone call and they're out the door. We cannot let that happen to Ohio State. I'm not trying to sound the alarm. I'm just trying to be transparent about what we're dealing with. Day said a top-tier QB, $2 million a year in NIL, or pay for play, whatever you want to call this. Elite edge rushers, $1 million. Offensive tackle, $1 million. Sure.
Wow.
Sure, lockdown corner. Yeah, top players.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably go higher. I hate, I don't know. I don't know where this goes. But again, Mahomes, Rodgers, Josh Allen, they're making $40, $50 million a year. The coaches are not in the NFL. I know that's long-term deals, but the day of a great quarterback to keep him, yeah, those guys are going to be worth an enormous amount of money.
Clearly, I mean, it's staggering to think that we went from, hey, you may be able to get $5,900 for Alston and a cost of attendance bonus of like $350 to, hey, here's $2 million. it's
going to go higher. You got to look at this in the terms of the NFL, any pro sport salaries, any pro sport. How often does the coach make more than the players? Rarely. I mean, certainly some players. Yes.
Yeah.
Belichick's probably making $15-20 million a year.
Yeah.
One's really sure, but he's making whatever he wants. Not a lot of players aren't making it. But that is the extreme. I know, like, Becky Hammon is making $1 million a year coaching the WNBA, right? It's big names. To keep a player, sure. Now, are top-tier QBs always going to jump for cash for, like, a one-year leave? I don't know. That's be kind of crazy, right?
Right.
Like,
it would be.
CJ Stroud give up what he's got that's working just to grab an extra $250,000 somewhere else or $500,000, you know, which would be 10, 20%. Let's say he's making $2 million at Ohio State. Or even one, whatever he's made. I don't know that those great quarterbacks are going to jump. That's the thing that will probably suppress their market.
They shouldn't, because they are a year or two, in the most instances, away from the real big money in the NFL. So you go there and you're going to get a rookie deal that, okay, it's not going to be the big money, but still you're going to be making more in the NFL than you will in college.
And then you're 4 years from,
Then you really start raking it in. So if I were an elite college quarterback, I would still view it as, what is the best fast way to get me to the NFL? Not like, hey, I can make a little bit more. I can make X amount this year, but I can make more if I go over there and change systems and change everything else. I would not play that game.
Athletic director Gene Smith, unscrupulous characters are good at what they do, and it's always been that way. Okay. I don't know who's unscrupulous here, but matter of opinion, I suppose.
Uh-huh. And Ohio State's never really had anything to do with unscrupulous sports.
No. <mm-mm. laughs> They're squeaky clean up there above the Mason-Dixon line.
Always.
I think the biggest, again, I'll say this again, I'll do it quickly, but the biggest issue is that transfer portal thing, because it really does, like, the free agency aspect. And you can enter the portal and not transfer, take your raise, and then enter the portal again. But, you know, if someone else wants to pay you, that's your bit, but certainly an interesting thing. $13 million, I think that would jump up. It very well may cost $20 million a year to have a college football team, but yeah, they can raise that.
At Ohio State, they can.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they'll raise it at a bunch of schools. You could also have one guy. It only takes one guy somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, where's T-Boone back in the day?
Right, for sure. Phil Knight, instead of, you know, building 9 facilities, you just say, okay, here's the NIL money.
We talked about Michigan State last year. Matt Ishbia steps up. He gets $32 million for facility construction, and then basically he and one other guy funded the groundbreaking $9.5 million deal for Mel Tucker.
Right.
That blew all the contracts out of the water, because they're like, we can't have another situation where we once had Nick Saban on this campus and lost him.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Like, how much money did Michigan State lose by not somehow keeping Nick Saban? I don't know if money could have kept them or not, but maybe it would have.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if they'd had a proactive mega booster then, that would have been very interesting. History.
That's
might
a
look
fun
a
what
different.
If. That's a fun what if. What if he stayed in?
What if he stays at Michigan State? Does he win that many national championships? Probably not. No. He wouldn't have, because he wouldn't have had that kind of talent.
Right.
But he would have got a lot of talent.
Yeah. Could have changed the balance in the Big Ten.
Could have changed it. And you don't let yourself get outbid on whatever.
How bad Michigan would have felt, right? They're Lloyd Carr's kind of like starting to go down when Saban left for LSU. And then if Michigan State keeps going like this, Ohio State keeps going like that. Woo.
Yeah, that would have been wild. I mean, it's like things were rough enough for Michigan for quite a while, but they could have been worse if Michigan State had capitalized.
Yeah, I mean, they did, but it was like, I mean, D'Antonio got him.
Yeah, I mean, he was good.
Got him good, but it wasn't Nick Saban sitting there.
Right.
All right, let's get to the other issue in the SEC. And this is, if you're not an SEC fan, maybe you don't care so much, but this is going to be the issue in all the leagues. 8 games, 9 games. The divisions are going away. You play, and the two proposals that seem to have some bit, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, Pat, is either a, certainly for the SEC, you get one of your, if you play 9 games, or if you play 8 games, you get one carryover opponent, and then 7 teams will rotate through, right? And so in a 16-team league, you'd play everybody every 2 years. Is that right?
Correct.
I think that makes sense, right? Because it's 16, but one is you, and okay, that's out there, but you lose a lot of, like, you lose a lot of annual rivals,
right?
That way, Alabama plays Auburn. Well, Auburn plays Alabama. They can no longer play Georgia every year, which they've been doing forever, or whatever thing is, right? What do you do with Texas? Do you play Oklahoma or do you play Texas A&M every year?
Right.
You can't get rid of the shootout, but everyone's excited about Texas A&M. All right. Or you do 3 games. You go 9 and have 3 common opponents. 6 rotate through. Do you still get everybody through in 2 years or what? I don't know. You get them through quickly.
Yeah. You can still do
it. Yes. You have to do that. Okay. That's what I heard were the top 2 things. Is that what you heard? Or if you have something different or better, let me know.
Yes. No, that's those are definitely the 2 considerations. 1-7 or 3-6. 8 games or 9 games. The expectation was that this would be decided here this week. And now on Friday, we are not looking at a decision this week. There's a couple things at play. First of all, there's genuine disagreement within the conference because the, you know, teams on the quote unquote lower half of the league don't want to play more league games because they're going to lose more and it's going to be harder to be bowl eligible and harder to, you know, sell your fans. We have a winning program and put together winning seasons and all that sort of thing. The teams at the top half are like, yeah, no, we're fine with more of that. And we also are looking at this as a TV inventory situation. And that leads to the second part of this. And one of the theories going around about why this is not coming to a vote, not just because there's not a clear consensus, but that this may be a bit of a strategic stall game for TV purposes. The Big Ten is on the cusp. We're waiting like any day, like next week. Maybe some thought maybe it'd be this week for an announcement for their new TV deal. And it's supposed to be, you know, just a massive whopper. And Fox is going to play an even bigger role. And who else is going to be involved? But it's going to be, it'll set the new standard for revenue for a league. And so the SEC could well be sitting there saying, well, let's wait and see what the Big Ten is getting. And then we can go to our TV partners and say, well, we'll increase our revenue, our inventory of league games. We'll go from 8 to 9, but we got to get paid like the Big Ten's getting paid or better because our league is better. And so you wait this thing out and you don't have to. You can get on a Zoom call in August and say, OK, this is the new format and do it that way. You don't have to do it in person here. So I think there's a real good chance that this is another, you know, SEC revenue play. We saw one with getting Texas and Oklahoma, and now they're looking saying, we'll let the Big Ten set the market and then we're going to break the market.
All right. So makes total sense financially. Why reveal anything until you have to? I mean, this is not like there's a hard deadline,
right?
Of this, as you said. So what do you think will win? ESPN's going to want 9.
Yes.
Okay. They're going to want as much inventory as they can get. And they're going to want the big teams playing each other as much as possible. And that automatically increases by having an extra game. Will that win out over the concerns of your Vanderbilt or your whatever? I guess Vanderbilt's our easy punching bag in that league. And you got one more tough one. Or the other thing that I've heard, you take away a non-conference game and there's 5 in-state rivalry games in the SEC with ACC opponents. If you now only have 3 non-conference games, and Georgia's already got Georgia Tech, and Florida's already got Florida State, and South Carolina's already got Clemson. Kentucky's already got Louisville. And what's the other one? There's one more, isn't there? Okay, I guess 4. Maybe there's another I'm forgetting, but whatever. You have those 4 traditional rivals.
Yep.
Now you only have 2 non-conference games. How do you play a hard non-conference? Like, does that take that away? Places like Georgia and Florida are kind of interesting. Because certainly Georgia's in a tougher spot than Florida with this. But right now, when you just play the SEC East, Georgia doesn't really have a lot of good games in Athens.
Right.
You know, they get the steady diet of Missouri and Kentucky, and these ones are coming in. Their big game against Florida is in Jacksonville. And right. Same thing with the Gators. And these stadiums are not filling up. They're not getting huge attendance. So how do you do this? Well, one of the things you do is you get Notre Dame to come in, or you get somebody big, you know, you get that non-conference game that electrifies the place. Well, you know, can you do that and then go down to one warm-up game or keg game or in-state game? I think that's a real thing, because you're trying to balance TV money, you're trying to balance season ticket money and all of that, and you're trying to balance competitiveness. It's I don't know, did you discuss that with that angle with anyone down there? Did you hear anything buzz about that?
Yeah, and I think there's a real split along those lines too, because yes, there are people that they want, first of all, you know, like they want that at least one good non-conference game if you can do it. But if it's the difference between that and going 6-6 or 6-5-7 and not going to a bowl game and everybody's ticked, then I don't know. I think fans will almost always default to wanting to win. So, but yeah, they you talk to ADs, and that's one of the driving reasons behind mixing up the schedules is they've seen attendance go flat with some of these games you're playing every year against teams that the fans just don't get that interested in. So they're like, yeah, let's, you know, we need to bring Alabama to our campus more often. We need to bring Georgia to campus more often if you're on the west side. We need A&M in, you know, those sort of games that will sell tickets. So there is no doubt that it's a split. And if you look, like, the Kentucky-Louisville situation is an interesting dynamic there. Kentucky probably would like to stay at 8 and keep the Louisville game because, A, the fans like it, and, B, they win it most of the time. And so they have built their program on a bad non-conference schedule. They get 3 wins every single year, usually a Sun Belt team, a MAC team, and an FCS team. You get 3 wins there. Lately, you've been able to beat the tar out of Louisville. There's 4 wins. Scrape yourself to 2 or 3 in the SEC, and you've won 6 or 7. You're going bowling, and everybody's happy. So if you take that out of the bag, I don't think they would rather, you know, play Texas A&M more often and they'd rather keep the Louisville game. And if they go to 9 and they got to drop one, I wouldn't be shocked if Kentucky tried to drop the Louisville game and keep those other 3.
That's disappointing. You don't want to see that.
Right.
They're still going to fight at the dialysis clinic, but it's just going to happen less often.
It's going to be in basketball. But what happens? Yeah. Like some of these you can't dump. They have to play. Kentucky and Louisville have to play basketball per the state legislature, right?
Well, I don't know whether it ever was passed in the law, but it was threatened. It was absolutely going to be threatened. And yes, if they tried to take that one off the books, then you're going to see the politicians get involved in a big way. Basketball game must happen. Football game, I still think must happen, but I'm not in charge.
It's tough. Look, Kentucky is selling more tickets because they've got W's, and you can get up 8, 9, 10 wins, and you're a hot team, and everyone kind of forgets how you got there. Those big games, I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, ideally they'd play one easy game, play Louisville, go out and schedule somebody pretty good. Kentucky never schedules anybody else, huh?
No,
or they're fine with 2.
Find me the last time they played a non-conference Power 5 game against somebody other
Indiana
than Louisville
or something. They used to
play.
They
love Kent State and Bowling Green.
They had a thing with Indiana for a little while, didn't they?
No. They did, and it was, you know, I mean, it was, look, I covered a lot of those games. They were terrible, but somebody had to win, and that was at the time when both those schools are like 4-7 every year. Yeah.
No question. Kentucky should be playing West Virginia or getting an Ohio State series going or something like that, like do a little bit that. You know, you look at like Texas A&M, they got, you know, we talked about their record earlier. Did they have a good season? Like, I mean, they beat Alabama, but other than that, no.
No.
They did last year. They beat Kent State. They beat Colorado barely. They beat New Mexico. Barely. They lost Arkansas. They lost to Mississippi State. They beat Alabama. They lost to Missouri, or they beat Missouri, I'm sorry. They beat South Carolina, they beat Auburn. They lost to Ole Miss, they beat Prairie View, and then they lost to LSU.
Yeah.
But it says 8-4, and they beat Bama, and everyone's happy.
That's right.
They didn't beat anybody last year.
No. Jimbo went to bat, actually, for the FCS game, too. That was part of his thing. And he says it's good for football as a whole, because the guarantee money trickles down to the lower levels, and they can make their budget on that. That's all well and good, but I don't think that's Jimbo's prime motivation for wanting an FCS.
I think they could, if they really wanted to, like, You know, there's other ways to do that. If this is out of the goodness of their heart, they could do some revenue sharing or something.
Yeah.
That game, I don't know. So it's like cannon fodder.
Yeah, the most criticized part of the SEC schedule every year is that late November FCS game before you play your rivalry game.
Yeah.
But
that's just because they play it then when everyone's paying attention.
I know, right. I know. I don't like them. I don't like the FCS games for two reasons. One, yeah, it is like cannon fodder. I think it's bad for the FCS teams other than the paycheck, the actual players it's bad for. And they're just not interesting to watch. But
move it. I've always loved the Galaxy brain idea of moving it, changing the spring game where you bring in, you know, Tennessee would bring in Chattanooga and that's your spring game.
Yeah, that'd be
fine. I feel like that's amazing. Pay him $1 million to come up there and play in the spring, and there's your charity.
Yeah, I would be fine with that idea.
I'd like that better. That'd be something. I mean, sometimes they let people in for, like, bring a can of soup and stuff. I mean, I don't know. All right, so you think they're going to end up at 9, and so you think it's going to be the 3-6.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do. And the other money thing that talk. Does, it does preserve the secondary and tertiary rivalries, you know, maybe not all of them, because you still have to balance the schedules, but it does give a chance for.
I think that's the most important data point here.
That's the most important data point. There's just no good solution here. I respect the problem. I'm not, right. I fear the loss of those great, but if they expand the playoff, we'll get those games. That's the other thing. When they expand the playoff, because I love when Notre Dame plays Georgia, or I don't know, some of the different ones we got. Penn State's playing Auburn, right?
Right.
Penn State's at Auburn this year. It's awesome.
It's great.
It's awesome. We want that. And you don't want to lose that. I'm glad that they're starting to move back to playing on campus and away from these neutral sites, because the fans are saying, why am I buying a season ticket package? You know, let's play a real game on campus. Alabama's starting to do that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. All right. Quick shift to college basketball, but I think it affects all sorts of different sports. The NBA's stay in the draft, out of the draft bit. Drew Timmy of Gonzaga, probably the biggest name to decide to come back to college, stay in college. But there's a lot of college basketball players who decide to stay. And Timmy, to me, is the perfect example of a guy who's going to make more money in college basketball. He's going to make as a pro.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what position he plays. I still don't know if he's any good. He remains a mystery to me. Yes,
that was your existential question at the end.
I'm still wondering. There's times he's really good. Is Drew Timmy good? Or is he just, I don't know. Anyway, he's back. But that's good for college basketball. A lot of familiar faces and names. I'm glad these guys are making their cash. I guess two thoughts. One on that. And then two, is Gonzaga going to be number one? And should anyone believe it? Should they be banned? Should we have a clause? You're not allowed to be number one until you win. Just enough. Or is that's not right?
No.
Can we rig the votes?
I think we need to rig the votes now. I've come around to that way of thinking after. Like, I thought they were the best team last year, and then I was also there when they just flamed out against Arkansas, and now they've got to prove themselves again to me. And that starts with Drew Timmy, by golly, whether he's good or not. But it's the second straight year that, to the surprise of some, Timmy has come back. You know, after putting up huge numbers, he's very effective in their system. But he doesn't really fit the modern NBA. He doesn't have the shooting range. He doesn't necessarily have the foot speed to cover on the perimeter. And he also doesn't have the length and athleticism to be a rim protector. So where does he play? I don't know. So, yeah, stay at Gonzaga. You will be able to make NIL money at Gonzaga and in Spokane and be a very good player at that level, as opposed to going and getting cut and ending up either in the G League or in Israel, Lithuania, whatever. So, and also actually with the European strife going on right now, I think there's fewer jobs and less interest in going and going that route at this moment. So
Australia, China, wherever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But so Timmy, I think, does a very smart thing. And I'm afraid Gonzaga is going to start at number one, but you know, we have seen this refrain for 2 years in a row now. So I've got to see more from the Zags.
We got SoCon Player of the Year Malachi Smith from Chattanooga transferring into the Zags, baby. That's why he's staying. He's fired up.
They won the week for sure. I mean, Timmy came out of the draft. Julian Strother, who had a very good sophomore year, came out of the draft, and they got the best remaining transfer probably in Malachi Smith. So they've got players. We'll just see if they can hack it when the going gets tough.
Get enough cracks at that. It's eventually going to get it, or so they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Well, all right. A couple things. Let's play a game of Would You Eat It? This was better when Pete was around because he wouldn't eat it.
Yeah, Pete wouldn't eat anything. Pete ate vegetables and roasted chicken.
Acai bowls.
Yeah.
Which I've come to find really aren't that bad.
Uh-oh. Have you gone to the dark side?
Yeah, they're basically just a smoothie and it's not that bad. This sounds fancy.
It does.
Took me a long time to figure that out.
The daughter's got you setting an acai bowl down in front of you on a road trip or something and made you eat one?
I saw her eating one. I was like, what's that? That looks pretty good. Then I found out what it was. So all those years of making fun of Pete.
Don't let that stop you.
Yeah, I'm not admitting it. He still listens. Good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the Would You Eat It regional division for the College Baseball World Series.
There we go.
Okay, we have different ones. Let's start at Miami, University of Miami.
Yep.
They are big on the shakes.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready for this? Canisius is in the regional.
Yeah.
Canisius is in Buffalo.
Yep.
So we have to honor Canisius, there is the vanilla shake with buffalo wings, ranch, and hot sauce.
What? You cannot be serious.
Now, yeah, I'm serious. There is a vanilla shake. It's got the ones I'm looking at have two carrots, two celery sticks, and two chicken wings in it, the drums, not the flats, and apparently some hot sauce, and I don't know where the ranch is, but that must be mixed into the vanilla shake.
That's a complete atrocity. You cannot do that. You can't do that. You cannot add, like, to a sweetness, like a shake, you cannot add chicken wings, especially, all right, so not only is the taste, like, a terrible combination, but you then make the wings cold and soggy. You want the wings to be more crispy. Like, I don't like the one problem with Buffalo Wild Wings. They put too much sauce on them and they're a little too drippy. And now you're going to put a vanilla shake on them? You can't do it. I would not eat it. And not only that, I would go to the concession stand and like demand that they stop doing this to people and stop doing it to innocent chicken wings.
In fairness, they have the part you would hold as a handle. That's the part that's submerged in the shake. So conceivably the wing could stay kind of hot, the meat part.
Okay.
But that
it's not literally,
but I don't know. Major concerns. Major red flag.
Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it.
I think you're gonna like the rest of the teams in this region.
Sully, would you eat it?
I would not, because when you pull up the full menu, they have a jelly donut version. So this guy named Mark Light milkshakes been going on forever at the old A-Rod Stadium down there. Jelly donuts, it's a raspberry shake with Krispy Kreme in it.
Now that's much more tolerable.
I mean, at least it's like dessert on dessert, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right, so Dan, walk us through the rest of the region.
Okay, I got
here.
Some others. First off, we have Ole Miss is playing there, Sully.
Yep.
Okay, Ole Miss is there. They have the Hottie Toddy. Yes, so this would be a vanilla shake with cinnamon and bourbon flavor.
Apparently not
spiked, and then a lemon hanging out the side.
I'm not spiked. We can't get a little real bourbon in there.
Bring your own. I don't know.
Okay.
The bars, the main strip of bars for Miami are right pretty close, so you could probably spike that yourself.
You can't expect the University of Miami to be promoting any kind of alcohol I mean, it's a wonder it's not a line of Coke in it. I mean, that's what the straw is for. We give you the straw to blow the Coke, and then this is just something you have after that. I mean, what are we doing here, Miami? Come on. Born and raised in the county of Dade, and we're getting the non-alcoholic version of the Hottie Toddy? Trick Daddy would be horrified at this.
So would Nevin Shapiro, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Would you eat that? I'm guessing a yes.
Yeah. I'm down with that.
Sully, you're yes for everything, pretty much.
Pretty much. But except I said no the last one.
That's true. But only because you wanted to have two of the others.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's Sully's first ever no, I think, in the
Yeah, and it was like for a weird reason. Like he was I mean, this is a hypothetical question. Like no, I don't want to fill up. You're not actually having it.
I'm ready for the next one too. Like I want the rest of the region. I'm done. Canisius is out. Arizona and Ole Miss in.
What's Arizona?
Arizona has a vanilla prickly pear margarita flavor.
Ooh, yeah, I could do that. Although, again, you're getting sweet and sour in there, and I don't know whether vanilla and prickly pear are going to mix
it's
real well.
Like it's kind of like a key lime pie kind of get-together.
They should do the key lime pie. Miami. Yeah, it's Miami. Right? I don't see the key lime on here. All right.
Hey, they got to have their own home field advantage. They quit catering to all the visitors and have your own. Come on.
All right, here is some of their others. Their normal ones at the Mark Like Milkshakes. The Turnover Chain, vanilla shake with cake and hot fudge.
Like the name.
Kitchen Sink has everything we have and hot fudge. Let's see, what other ones we got?
I love the 8 laterals in reference to the Duke game. That was a shit show. Oh,
do they have an 8 lateral shake?
That's eight chocolate mix-ins and a chocolate shake. It's a lot of chocolate.
Yep.
Let's see, what else we got? They have the named ones. Cane shooter, raspberry shake with hot fudge. I mean, these are all good. These are all like if you like that.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going with the weird one. There's too many good ones on this menu.
The Grandma Debbie vanilla shake with magic brownies. Now we're talking Miami.
Magic brownies. Right.
Grandma Debbie special brownies.
Grandma Debbie. Huh? You know, the grandmas now were like, they're like children of the 60s and 70s. Of course. Like they were dropping out and stuff, right? I see you, Grandma Debbie.
If we can't get the cocaine shake, we will take the magic brownie shake.
The magic brownie shake. Ugh. The ranch dressing in the shake is problematic to me. Blue cheese would be worse, but I just think the vanilla serves the purpose of the cooling agent. So I think that's unnecessary.
I want no part of any of it.
Pick our final eight. It's like the Tokyo subway line map, trying to figure out how this works.
Yeah, it's a big fella.
It's a big fella.
This bracket's got some meat on the bone. Where is this going? Let's put a little marinara on it. Spin it around your fork. I don't even know. I don't even know how to read this thing. Got to dig in one bracket at a time, huh?
16 regionals, 4 teams apiece, and then you got your 8 supers, and then down to your 8 teams.
Yeah, you get down there. All right. I'm just going to read Sully's. If we try to break this thing down all three ways, this pod will be an hour and a half.
Yeah.
If you have picks, tweet at us.
Yeah, let us know.
Sully Vol is probably the best way. He's usually on top of it. But here is Sully's 8 for Omaha. Pat, you might be surprised to hear Tennessee is one.
Shocking.
Yeah. I mean, they are the best team this year.
They are. And I did actually sit with Ray Tanner, the AD at South Carolina and the former national champion coach there. And he said it's one of the best teams he's seen in a while. So that's legit.
Okay. He has Tennessee defeating Oregon State in the finale.
Okay. Beaver believer.
Beaver believer. That's
right. Oregon State, really good team out of the Pac-12. Stanford has beaten them at every turn. Yep. Stanford is nasty. They're the hottest team not named Tennessee right now, and I think Oregon gets them in the end.
Okay. You also have Stanford and Oklahoma. Oklahoma losing to Tennessee and Stanford losing to Oregon State.
Yep, those are the two. East Carolina, A&M, Miami also making it as well, and Oklahoma State. Got Oklahoma. How about it?
Well, I am not down with Oklahoma State making it because apparently the hotels in Stillwater are not – very nice. Oh, was it a Missouri State player was tweeting some of the grossness in their hotel room there, like human hair, bloody sheets, cockroaches. I mean,
sounds like happy hour at the Shady Gators in Missouri. What is this guy complaining about?
Come on, man. That's disgusting. That's even worse than the hotel rooms at the Final Four in Houston. That's awful. So Arkansas will win that region over Oklahoma State just based on cleanliness of hotel.
That's a toss-up. Yeah, that's a really nasty regional. Arkansas's kind of limping into this thing, but Speaking of T. Boone Pickens, that $65 million palace out there in Oklahoma State. That's
tell him
good
to
place.
Spend a little on hotel maids.
Spend it on spend it on your players.
Yeah.
$65 million to practice baseball. Do you know where the Boston Red Sox practice? Underneath the bleachers.
Yeah, but Fenway is not even nice. That place is a dump.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's 110 years old or something.
Yeah, exactly. This is a $65 million palace. It's awesome.
This is why I want them to pay the players. Come on.
Yeah, right?
They need a third full-time coach before they do that stuff, but that's coming.
Anyway, college baseball's rocking.
I'm picking Stanford to win because my kid goes there and because several of the swimmers dated baseball players, and so go
Cardinals. They're really good.
That's a great
really freaking Pat. Good. Yep. That's good.
That's what you get from me.
I have one, like, just what happened to, like, California? Did we just out this year? What? Nobody from California is any good?
No, like, there's some California teams in here.
Yeah.
UCLA, not your picks.
UCLA is in. They're in Auburn's region. That could be a good
San Diego
tussle.
Made it.
Yeah. From UC Santa Barbara.
But you have none of these guys doing well.
Because Stanford.
I guess Stanford is in California, right? Southern California, I was thinking. Anyway, well, I always like when like Northridge or somebody sneaks in. I like the underdog. I'm going to root for East Carolina then.
Root for East Carolina, Southern Miss, Georgia Southern. They're all hosting regions. Root for them.
I picked UC Santa Barbara as a runner-up, but they're in Stanford regional. UCLA has to go up against Florida State and Auburn. That's a nasty region. So
Dallas Baptist, man, there are a lot of Baptists in Dallas. They line all those guys up. You'll never get a hit.
Dallas Baptist, Texas in the same regional. There you go. A little backyard scrap.
Yeah. Texas just won the golf championship. So
the one storyline this weekend that if you're a average, just, you know, run of the mill fan that doesn't watch a lot of college baseball, the Schlossnagel Bowl is going down in College Station.
What?
Schlossnagel Bowl, one of the best coaches in the game, left TCU. This is like Tommy Tuberville leaving Auburn to or leaving Ole Miss to go to Auburn and then playing the next year and going overtime. TCU is going to College Station. They won the Big 12. Felt like they should have been a host, but instead A&M gets the host spot and they get stuck going to College Station. So a lot of storylines. It's going to be nasty down there.
Schlossnagel. There we go.
Schlossnagel, the Schloss Bowl.
All right.
Last episode, I did a dramatic reading of Summer Girls by LFO, the classic summertime song.
And in the summer.
Classic.
In the summer.
Yes. Some of the worst lyrics ever written. I declare it the worst song ever written. Lyrically, but I had forgotten about this one, and people seem to really enjoy Pat just freaking out. Pat has not heard any songs. It's like Beethoven's.
I've heard many songs, but not that.
You didn't even get to Beethoven's fifth. You just stopped at Beethoven's fourth. You're like, not that good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't.
You got to give these guys time to keep going. No one talks about Beethoven's first. Could be total crap. We don't know.
LFO should never be allowed to have recorded again after that song, really, or do anything. Just export them.
Well, I have a treat for you.
Okay.
All right. This is a song. Now, we'll make a couple fairness. It was a terribly written song. It's by a YouTube personality named Rebecca Black, and she was like 13 years old when she wrote this song. This is about 10 years old, and she has now kind of embraced that how bad it was. So she kind of knows. I mean, this is undeniable, okay? So I play a little bit of this song, and then I will do a dramatic reading of what it truly is. The listeners reminded me this is truly the worst written song in the history of music. But can you play a little bit of this so Pat or anybody else who's never heard Rebecca Black's Friday?
7 a.m. waking up in the morning. Gotta be fresh, gotta go downstairs. Gotta have my bowl, gotta have cereal. Seeing everything, the time is going. Ticking on and on, everybody's rushing. Gotta get down to the bus stop.
All right, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of that. It's this. All right, Sal, you can cut it. It's this quick talking kind of nasally voice. It's not as nearly as catchy as Summer Girls.
Oh, God.
But it went huge, both because it's so bad. But I'm going to do a dramatic reading of this.
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
And now the song is called Friday.
Okay.
Okay. So this is basically, I guess, a Friday.
It's a Friday like she's going to school.
Yeah. Friday, school day. School day, right?
School day. Yep.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning. Got to be fresh. Got to go downstairs.
Got to go down. All right. Well, we're taking things incrementally. Yep.
So, it's all details. Got to have my bowl. Got to have cereal. Seeing everything, the time is going. Ticking on and on, everybody's rushing. Got to get down to the bus stop. Got to catch my bus. Then her friends show up in a convertible somehow in the video.
No bus.
Yeah,
no
bus. She ends up not taking the bus. But it's Friday. Got to get down on Friday. Everyone's looking forward to the weekend. Friday. Getting down on Friday. Okay. Everyone's looking forward to the weekend.
Weekend.
Only one weekend on that part.
So, okay.
You get the sense this is Friday.
I do. And the riveting detail of getting up and getting out of the house. I mean, it worked once for the Beatles. Woke up, got out of bed, dragged a comb across my head, and so on and so forth. I don't think this is a very good successor to that.
Maybe it is.
But all right, she was 13 at the time.
13,
I can forgive a 13-year-old for writing a terrible song. You kind of do.
It's whoever put this
in. I can't forgive the LFO atrocity.
We're not done, though, Pat. We're not done here. We're not done.
Okay, there's more.
There's 160 million views of this on YouTube. So yeah,
this is a very popular song in its own right, too. There's a whole world going on out there, Pat, that you don't know about.
Apparently so. Gosh, yeah. I feel so disenfranchised.
Okay, so the friends show up in a convertible, kicking in the front seat, sitting in the back seat. Got to make up my mind. Or I got to make my mind up. I want to get this wrong. Which seat can I take?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, that is
one of the great existential questions, you know. Why am I here on this earth?
We haven't even gotten to my favorite part of the song.
We're going to get to it. And it really is something else.
Okay.
But well, 7:45. What time did she wake up? Did she say? 7. Oh, so 45 minutes later. 7:45, we're driving on the highway. Cruising so fast, I want time to fly. Fun. Think about fun. You know what it is. I got this. You got this. My friend is by my right. I got this. You got this. Now you know it. What? I have no idea what she's talking about. What is Rebecca Black talking about, Pat?
I have no idea.
It says, now you know it.
Now you know it.
That we got this on our pop quiz or something, I would imagine.
We go right back to kicking in the front seat, sitting in the back seat. Got to make up my mind. Which seat can I take? You got to yell shotgun, right? That's how you.
Yeah, that's seat. Always. I mean, you know, if you're worried about driving to school and there, that was a constant debate in my day.
Whoever okay. That doesn't fill first. Up an entire verse, though, Dan.
Twice.
shotgun.
We get back to another bit of Friday. It's Friday. Got to get down on Friday. Everyone's looking forward to the weekend. All right, here it is. This is the best. Yesterday was Thursday. Today is Friday.
She has excellent command of the calendar. Give her credit.
We are so excited. We're going to have a ball today. Wait, it gets more. This is a kindergarten days of the week lesson. Tomorrow is Saturday. And Sunday comes afterwards.
What?
I don't want this weekend to end.
Oh, Lord.
It's true. If today is Friday, and in fact, as we take this, it is Friday.
It is.
Yesterday it is. Was Thursday. Tomorrow is Saturday. And Sunday comes afterwards.
Amazing. What was true for Rebecca Black at age 13 is still true today. She was talking about universal truths, Dan.
Sully, do you have any trivia on this? Did you say you met Rebecca Black?
I have met Rebecca
Black. Did you go to a fan meet and greet or something?
No, she showed up to a birthday party that I was at, and she was a delight. She was a delight. I'm a big Rebecca Black fan, personally, and she's actually got, she's got more than one song. So this is on Spotify. Friday has 15 million, and then she's got a 10 million. She's got a 3 million and a 1 million. She's doing well for herself. She got a lot of crap at a young age for this song, and she's still in the game. So
she has, she's embraced it. Yes, she's done a good job. She, I think she had some trauma after everyone crapped on the song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but somebody needed to help her out with those lyrics.
Yeah, we're still crapping on the song with good reason, but good for her. She's 24. I'm looking at her birthday. She's almost the exact same age as my middle child, and I'm sure she's made a lot more money than he has. So good for her.
It's a big moment. Anyway, I felt the need, by those standards, the Summer Girls is Billy Shakespeare wrote a bunch of sonnets. This makes the Applebee's country music song, like, this is right.
Yeah, no, this is the Applebee's country music song is now rocketing up in my estimation. It's suddenly like has artistic merit. I still look, I have great hostility for the imbeciles from LFO, but I will at least find a little bit of excuse for poor Rebecca Black for being a 13-year-old writing a horrible song that for some reason people listen to.
Still, she's still making bank off this thing, and we're helping because some people will go to YouTube and just listen to it.
Sure they will.
There you go. All right, that is our podcast. We can't get any worse than this. And we're not doing dramatic readings every episode. I felt compelled.
We'll see. Tell the listeners, come up, give us your worst. We'll see. If
June is a long month.
You can't do worse than that.
Friday is indeed after Thursday and before
fun
Sunday.
Yeah, you gotta actually listen to this thing, which we will play. Do we have to pay her if we play this whole song?
I'm not playing this. We're done with Friday. We're on to the next.
You know, we're like Jimbo Fisher. We're moving on.
Yeah, we're over with it. I'm over it.
It is somebody Friday. Really likes this woman because, like,
he does.
He's really protective. I've never seen him be protective of anyone except Rebecca Black.
She was 13 when she wrote it. We're getting crapping on her a decade later just because you guys haven't heard the damn song.
I heard it. We have found the tipping point where Sully said we're too mean. We have never been too mean.
It's finally happened.
In years of this podcast, making fun of everybody, including ourselves. Pat once ripped his own daughter's performance at a swim meet.
Yeah, that was like a week later. This is a decade later. We're still stomping on her grave.
Stomping on her grave. Listen, Sully has a kind heart.
What is going on?
Hey, Tennessee's playing today. I'm just looking for some good karma, okay? It all comes back to it.
Okay. Friday.
Gotta beat Alabama State.
We gotta get down on Friday.
Friday.
Yeah.
So we will not make fun of Rebecca Black anymore. I'm sorry.
We'll have a kind, gentle, good karma weekend.
Sully
wants it.
Getting all hearts and flowers around here. Jeez. Talk to y'all next week.